and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris ends her week-long Africa trip in Zambia.
Our president's priority was to reconfigure Zambia in the face of the international community and also to show the progress that we have made. So to have a high-level visit of this magnitude, it means that we have made some progress.
A parliamentarian denies media reports about a rift between Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and his son Muhoozi Kainerugaba.
There is no chaos within the executive, nothing whatsoever. The executive is working, fully functioning, without any problem.
And a leading member of a political party denounces a court ruling against Senegalese presidential aspirant Ousmane Sanko. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Vice President Kamala Harris ends her week-long Africa trip in Zambia. Key on her agenda during the trip is a scheduled meeting with President Hakainde Hichilema to discuss multilateral agreements as well as deepening ties between Washington and Lusaka. It will be the second time Harris meets Hichilema following their meeting at the U.S.-Africa Leadership Summit held last year in Washington, D.C. The visit comes as Zambia appears to be receiving a lot of attention from the U.S. This after a recent visit by U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. For more about the U.S. Vice President's visit, the anticipated impact, and the relationship between the two countries, I read Zambian Foreign Minister Stanley Kakubo via Microsoft Teams. In part one of this interview, Kakubo underscores the importance of the U.S. Vice President's visit.
For us in Zambia, first of all, it's a very, very good signal of what our new government has been able to push. Our president's priority was to reconfigure Zambia in the face of the international community and also to show the progress that we have made. So to have a high-level visit of this magnitude, it means that we have made some progress and that we are moving in the right direction. I mean, the U.S. vice president coming to our country shows the political will of the U.S. government itself to engage Zambia in matters of mutual interest between our two countries, whether it is trade, whether it is them to participate in the Zambian economy, and also for us to collaborate. But at the same time, I must mention that this shouldn't surprise anybody. That's because we've always had strong bilateral relationships with the U.S. government. And then when countries have bilateral relations with each other, high-level visits of this nature are important to strengthen the bilateral relationships and also for high-level consultations. As you may be aware, President Hichilema, our president, has been to the U.S. a few times, and he's actually been to the White House. And this will not be the first engagement with Vice President Kamala Harris. The last time they met in Washington, and we're excited to have her. She's coming back to a place where she's been before. So it's about time.
Yeah. You know, the vice president has a long history with Zambia. So, Minister Kakubo, what are the expectations of the people of Zambia?
I think when we look at where we are as a country, apart from just the vice president having a footprint in Zambia, in Lusaka, our expectations are extremely high. We're expecting that there should be high pronunciations on the next level of our bilateral relations. There should be pronouncements in U.S. investments in our country. I think that is what the Zambian public, the Zambian youth, who are really the owners of this country, are looking out for. What message is she bringing to our country? That's very important for us. For us, it means that if there's high-level investments, more foreign direct investment, that means that we can add value to our natural resources. It also means that the youths who voted our government in can be assured of jobs. We're also looking forward to pronouncements that from not only from the vice president, but also from the private sector players from the US that she's coming to Zambia. We are aware that she's coming with a wide spectrum of US investors, and we're looking to see where we can enhance our bilateral relationship just from handshakes, but to actual business transactions between our two countries. And I think that is what the Zambian public and the Zambian government are in sync and looking forward to.
Yeah. Mr. Foreign Minister, you talk about a little bit about the economic impact, but do you have the structures in place, the measures in place to take advantage of the positive economic impact the visit will be?
Certainly. We've come a long way as a country. If you had this discussion with me, say, 2 years ago, it would have been difficult to respond. But we've made progress as a government. We've got our economic fundamentals in place. When our president was coming in as a leader of this country, the GDP growth had really gone into the negative as low as 2.8%. As I speak to you today, we are hovering around 3%. So in terms of actual percentage movements, we've made progress by 5% plus. And when you look at our interest rates, they are competitive. They've gone down. Our inflation rate is below 10%, and the environment is good. Of course, there are things that we need to get better at, and we are working on those things. Our government is strongly pro-business. Our president, for instance, is coming straight from the private sector, and now he's president of our country. And most of us have worked in the private sector. We want to reconfigure our economy. One of the things that could be a possible bottleneck is the debt overhang that we have. But we've been dealing with this issue hands-on. And one of the key partners in helping us to resolve this debt is the US. Of course, there are other countries such as France, under the common framework, France, and also our good partnership with China, that we are all looking to resolve this debt under the common framework. But all in all, our country is open for business. We know where the world is going. As you know, the world now, for example, is evolving from petroleum-driven engines to the electric motor vehicle system. The EV vehicles are strategic for Zambia. We have, I'm proud to say that by God's grace, our country has all the metals that are required to ensure that electric vehicles are manufactured, especially to things to do with batteries. We have abundant copper here. We have cobalt. We have lithium. Zambia has manganese, except we have changed our strategy. We have adamant that no raw materials will leave Zambia ever again. Our strategy is that everything that we are endowed with, before it exits our borders to any destination, will add value from Zambia, because that is what it means for us to produce jobs for our people and also for us to get the much required foreign exchange.
Stanley Kakubo is Zambia's foreign minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Join us on Sunday for the concluding part of the conversation. A Ugandan parliamentarian from the Governing National Resistance Movement, or NRM, has denied media reports about a rift between President Yoweri Museveni and his son Muhoozi Kainerugaba. Both are said to be vying to represent the party in the next presidential election. Felix Adipa Ongwech says the reports appear to be agenda-driven by the opposition and aimed at creating a semblance of division within the national executive members of the ruling party. His reaction comes after local media report of a meeting where lawmakers from the NRM expressed concern about factions within the party who they say have lined up support for either Museveni or his son as the party's presidential candidate. The division, they say, could divide the front of the NRM and give an advantage to the opposition. But parliamentarian Felix Adipa Ongwech tells me it appears some people want to create trouble by suggesting a non-existing problem between the son of the president and the national executive of the party.
First of all, media, they have got their own sentiments, different aspects when politics is concerned. There is no chaos within the executive, nothing whatsoever. The executive is working fully functioning without any problem. The issue here is that people want to create an impression that there is a problem between the first son and the executive. And who is the head of the executive? Is his father. So I don't see any problem between the two. Secondly, the first son has got his constitutional right, as any other Ugandans, to contest for any political office of his choice.
Some people are suggesting that he is still within the army, and army officials are barred from active politics. However, his tweets online, his tweets, some people are saying if he were not to be a son of the president, should have been punished by the military by now. You don't think those concerns are legitimate?
The military has got its own law that governs all the soldiers in the country. If the military finds that any tweet by General Muhoozi Kainerugaba offends any law within the military rules, therefore, the army court martial will sit and it will be tried accordingly. But since up to now, the military court martial or the army council, they have not seen anything deemed fit to charge General Muhoozi Kainerugaba of anything. It means that whatever he is tweeting, yet he has not offended the law of the army.
The report suggests that a group of some lawmakers are supporting or might throw their weight behind Muhoozi Kainerugaba. Others are saying that President Yoweri Museveni must be maintained. You are still saying that news of the growing support from both sides are not true?
I want to state it very clear. The National Resistance Movement has got its own principle of electing their leader. Even the presidential candidate of 2026 is not yet known who will hold the flag of NRM as a presidential candidate. The same vein, if Muhoozi Kainerugaba is going to come, we want to know which political party he will be coming. Secondly, I would confirm that Muhoozi Kainerugaba is contesting for the presidency when I see him retiring from the army. But as per the way it is now, we cannot keep on meandering and wasting a lot of time discussing Muhoozi, yet we know he's still a serving UPDF soldier.
For somebody to contest for the NRM presidential candidate slot in the 2026 general election, what are the key requirements that they need to meet in order to qualify or to be elected as the candidate for the NRM?
First of all, by the time that there will be, you have to interest yourself. You need to go and pick a form to express yourself for being a presidential candidate. Then afterward, you are vetted by the central executive. And when central executive sits and vets that you are not fit, then you will not be declared as one of the contestants for a presidential flag of NRM. Number two, you must be a registered voter of NRM. Your name must be on the register of NRM. Now, you know very well that all the army officers serving, they are non-partisan. And as we speak up to today, Muhoozi is not a member of NRM. Central executive will definitely forward your name to the national executive or the national delegate conference. Then you will be presented before the national delegate conference and your campaign will be before the national delegates. That's when you can become a flag bearer of NRM. So Muhoozi has a long way to go as far as NRM politics.
Felix Adipa Ongwech is a Ugandan parliamentarian from the governing NRM. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. During 2 weeks of anti-government protests in Kenya, more than 20 journalists have been attacked, according to the Kenya Media Council. The attacks have increased since the protests began last week. Camera persons and photographers have become targets of both the state and protesters. The council is demanding that authorities investigate the abuses and end impunity for journalists. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Journalists covering Kenya's anti-government protests have encountered hostility from both police and protesters as they clash in Nairobi and other parts of the country. Njeri Gathumbi works as camera person for Kenya's National Television. She says covering the protest this week was more difficult than covering the protest last week.
You go to the side of police, you're in danger of the stones, throwing and stuff. And when you go the side of public, the public will beat you up. And also you'll get tear gas from the police. So sometimes getting those pictures were a bit difficult. So you have to hide yourself somewhere so that you get the side of the public and the police, and especially when they were exchanging tear gas and stones.
The journalists were not specifically targeted until police boss Jafet Kaome said photos taken during the demonstration will be used to prosecute the protesters. The opposition group Azimio la Umoja Coalition, led by Raila Odinga, called for the demonstrations to protest the high cost of living and alleged electoral irregularities. The government declared the protest illegal and threatened to take action against the organizers and protesters. Attacks on journalists on Monday and Thursday have been condemned by media organizations, human rights groups, and advocates for media freedom and rights. Victor Bure is the head of media programs at the Media Council of Kenya. He says the attacks on journalists this month have been the worst in recent memory.
We have recorded more than 25 journalists in this month alone who have been harassed, brutally, physically attacked, arrested, slept in cells, equipment destroyed or stolen, attacks by mobs who steal their equipment, being beaten up, being profiled in public and TV by politicians, and by extension, being brutally beaten up, including with tear gases by the police officers who are supposed to secure the right to life of Kenyans.
The Kenya Union of Journalists Secretary General Eric Oduor says journalists covering protests have been targeted for their work.
If you look at how the attacks were done yesterday, these are the people who were in their car. And this officer actually went straight where the car was, started vandalizing the car so that he can get access to where the journalists were, so that they can also lob tear gas inside the car. So it's something that you can see, it was targeted. It was not by accident.
The police have yet to comment on the alleged conduct of some of their officers. Bure says the media coverage of the weekly protests is helping the public to make an informed decision about their safety.
Kenyans are entitled to access to information. Freedom of expression is enshrined in our constitution. And people who are coming, remember Nairobi is the central town most of in this country, and a lot of activities, once Nairobi is affected, you can have, so information that journalists are giving out there has helped other people to avoid even coming to town or knowing what is happening to make individual decisions.
The Media Council has urged authorities to investigate and prosecute those responsible for journalist attacks. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In Senegal, a leading member of Pasteur Les Patriotes, a political party led by presidential aspirant Ousmane Sonko, says the trial of the opposition leader is politically motivated. El Malik Ndiaye, the national secretary in charge of communication for the opposition group, says President Macky Sall's decision to seek another term after its 2 full-year terms expire can plunge the country into chaos and instability. His remarks came after opposition leader Ousmane Sonko was given a 2-month suspended prison sentence by a court in the capital, Dakar, Thursday. Analysts say the court ruling appears to be aimed at easing tensions in the West African country. They also say it will not prevent Sonko from contesting as a candidate in the next general election. Meanwhile, the opposition leader is calling for nationwide protest on April 3rd. For more reaction to the court ruling and the latest development, I reach El Malik Ndiaye of Pastel Le Patriot, or African Patriot of Senegal, for work ethics and fraternity.
For us, what is happening in Senegal is just a show trial, and really it makes us feeling ashamed. We can say that we leave aside the supposed chief to condemn the one who shouted at the chief. That's what to resume the situation. If you remember, 2 days ago, the prosecutor made it clear that they arrested someone for the attempted assassination of the President Ousmane Sonko. So all the people know that President Ousmane Sonko is currently sick. His lawyers provided a medical certificate which proves that their candidate cannot present himself at the court. But to our great surprise, the judge refused even to take the document. And worse still, Sonko's lawyer was arrested and repatriated to Paris. At the same time, they rolled out the red carpet for the civil party lawyer, who is Pierre-Olivier Schou, who was in Senegal and at the court this morning. And this is unacceptable in a big democracy like Senegal.
Some people are suggesting that claims by Ousmane Sonko and his supporters that the trial is a tactic to eliminate him from the presidential race is not true, because the two-month suspended sentence does not prevent him from contesting in the election.
Who knows? Who knows? Currently, we cannot know. When Khalifa Sall and Karim Watt was condemned, we could not know that after they will change the electoral law to avoid them candidating. So who knows what will happen? Do you, for your information, the parliament activities have been suspended since a while by Macky Sall and his president. So meaning we cannot know what is waiting for us. And we can say also, without the pressure of President Ousmane Sonko and the supports, maybe it would be another sentence. But also, currently, we don't know really how President Sonko is feeling and what he's suffering of what.
El Malik, what is next for Sonko? Because he keeps on calling for nationwide protest, as well as on April 3rd, he's calling for national protest. Isn't this going to further worsen the tension and create instability in Senegal?
I mean, what is creating instability in Senegal is just the non-respect of the justice, of the rules, of the democracy. And the main reason, there is one and only reason of the situation prevailing in Senegal, Macky Sall is trying to run for a third term, and this is unacceptable. This is banned by our constitutions, by all laws, and Macky Sall himself repeated so many times that he is doing his second and last term. So if tomorrow Macky Sall make a declaration saying that I will be respectful with what I said, I will be respectful with the constitution, I will not run for a third term, you will see that Senegal will be in the situation we knew before, like very stable, without any disturbance, without any issues. That's the main problem. It's not Ousmane Sonko. Ousmane Sonko, the only thing he wants is to do his political activities, continue meeting Senegalese people, and wait for 2024 to run for the election.
What do you say to those who are saying that Ousmane Sonko should go and face the allegation of sexual abuse that he faces and stop destabilizing Senegal?
Come on. That one really, even the government, we know that it was a complot, and it's clear enough. All people know that it's a complot. That's why they forget about that one and just focus on this show trial, I would say, to try to eliminate President Ousmane Sonko. But for the first one, we know that it was a complot, And all the testimonials, all the showing audio, video, all the proof show that it is a complot, and we can identify one by one all the people involved in this complot. And they know President Usman Sonko himself has put in the table 3 to 4 complaints just to clarify everything, and also to put a sentence for all people who participated in this complot, which cost us at least 13 victims.
El Malik Ndiaye is the National Secretary in charge of communication for the opposition African Patriots of Senegal for Work, Ethics and Fraternity. He spoke with me from the capital, Dakar.
Would you like to be famous? Calling us on WhatsApp may gain you fame if we play your message on the radio. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. Here's that number again. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
In Nigeria, the Department of State Services has identified individuals who it says are planning to install an interim government. The move, the security organization warns, will thwart the outcome of the February 25th general election. The Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, declared former Lagos State Governor and presidential candidate of the ruling All Progressive Congress, or APC, winner. He defeated former Vice President Atiku Abubakar of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, and former Anambra State Governor Peter Obi of the Labour Party. The two losing candidates are challenging the outcome of the election in court, citing voter irregularities and rigging. Analysts say the disputed outcome appears to have fueled rumors of an interim government. They also say the report of the Department of State Services confirming an alleged plot for an interim administration could increase tension. For analysis on the latest political and security developments in Nigeria, I reach Leonard Anyongo. He is an Abuja-based lawyer and political analyst.
If you look at the presidential result as it is, it's only 8 million of Nigerians that voted for the president-elect. The other 13 or 14 million voted against him. What I mean is that both the Labour Party and the PDP have about 13 million votes, as against the 8 million winning margin. And this election has been disputed even at the tribunal, election court. So there have been very major setbacks, because the credibility of the election is being questioned, even at the state level. And the mood of the country is a little bit tense now. DSS is Nigerian secret police. You know, so they have all the information that we ordinary Nigerians don't have.
Leonard, some people are suggesting that the report by the DSS sharply increases the tensed situation at the moment. Is this what you see and hear on the ground?
Yes, that is true. That is true. That is the, those are, you know what you say, you call it, you say the street talk. You know, there have been fear whether this democracy will actually survive after 29th May. You know, the Nigerian Constitution does not contemplate anything interim government. You know, the Nigerian Constitution 1, sub 1, sub 3 talks about the supremacy of the Constitution and that the Nigerian government will be run according to the dictate of the Nigerian Constitution. But we've seen cases, of course, the last time we had something like interim national government was in 1993, but that was during the military regime of General Babangida. When he was leaving office, he handed over to the late Shonekan as an interim government because then a general election was annulled. So a lot of people are believing that a similar scenario is playing out. But then the 1993, it was the military regime, but now it's a democracy that is governed by a constitution. But so many people on the street feel that what they voted for is not the outcome, but it's been disputed. But if you look at it critically, I think the opposition divided their vote. Otherwise, if the opposition parties were in one ballot, very, very sure the ruling party will not have a seat. The mood of the country is tense. And then, of course, the DSS has come out to confirm that there's been plot to install an interim national government.
The spokesman for the DSS, Dr. Peter Afunanya, in a statement said the agency had identified some key players in the plot. The statement did not give the names of the masterminds, but the question a lot of Nigerians that I've spoken with
are asking is, if you know the people who are masterminds of this plot, why not arrest them?
That is very, very intriguing. Globally, we've seen where suspects have been arrested and before they address the press. But unfortunately, we do a lot of media trial in Nigeria. You know, so we are putting the horse before the cart, so to say. But I may be wrong, but I think that there are some caliber of persons in Nigeria that if they are arrested or invited, it might further stoke the tension. But nobody is above the law by the Nigerian constitution. So, but there are some arrests you make now that will be seen to be politically motivated. You know, so, but I think that the DSS maybe wants to play on the same side by saying, okay, we know your plot. Stop their plot and don't do that. And don't continue to do the illegality. I think it's more like a deterrent, an advanced deterrent, rather than taking proactive action that that the law empowered DSS to do. So, but I think they are trying to play safe at the moment. But the situation on the ground, that there's tension in the land. But you know that where there's political instability, development don't strive. And the president-elect has hinted that he's going to have a government of national unity. What that entails normally is that he's going to extend his hands of fellowship to the opposition to form a government. But I don't know whether you're going to see that through. But just like I said, the major political parties are in court already. I can confirm that the petitions have been filed. Even at the state level, there's having disputed results. My problem is, once an election umpire like INEC in Nigeria is being challenged, once the credibility of any election is being challenged, then the issue of legitimacy of any government thereafter is always being challenged, and that's the danger. And that's why this international government report shouldn't be taken lightly. I think Nigerians might have to come on the round table to face reality and take a decision one way or the other.
Leonard Anyogo is an Abuja-based lawyer and political analyst. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, hundreds of merchants gathered Friday in Chi-Osi, a Cameroonian town on the border with Gabon and Equatorial Guinea, to protest travel restrictions imposed since an outbreak of the deadly Marburg virus. They say the restrictions are suffocating trade and violate a Central African regional agreement on the free movement of people and goods. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Hundreds of merchants say they kept their businesses closed for several hours on Friday in Kiosi, a commercial town on Cameroon's southern border with Gabon and Equatorial Guinea. The merchants say business has nosedived since Cameroon and Gabon stepped up border security after neighboring Equatorial Guinea reported an outbreak of Marburg virus on its territory. Cameroonian merchant Kema Godlove imports vegetable oil, skin moisturizers and perfumes from Equatorial Guinea and exports cement and tiles to Equatorial Guinea and Gabon. Kema says within the past 10 days, merchants have found it difficult to cross the borders between the three countries.
Business people who leave Cameroon to meet their partners coming from Equatorial Guinea or from Gabon, they will definitely not come. So it affects the economic activities of QC. Actually, when borders are locked up, people relocate to different areas while waiting for the borders to be reopened. Because when the borders are not open, businesses, everything is almost paralyzed.
Kema spoke on Cameroon state broadcaster CRTV on Friday. He said some merchants have either sold their goods at giveaway prices or distributed perishable food items like fruits and vegetables so they don't go to waste. Kema said it would be better for governments of the three border states to keep the borders open for merchants and restrict only mass movements of people. The merchants say by restricting the movements of people, Cameroon, Gabon, and Equatorial Guinea are disrespecting a regional agreement among countries of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC. Under normal circumstances, several hundred merchants cross borders to Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, and Cameroon each day to do business. Cameroon and Gabon stepped up border security on February 13 after Equatorial Guinea confirmed an outbreak of the Marburg virus. Last week, authorities in Equatorial Guinea reported that Marburg had killed 9 people. The World Health Organization said the death toll may be as high as 20. Manauda Malashi, Cameroon's Minister of Public Health, says that for now, travel restrictions will be maintained. Manauda says although Cameroon and Gabon have not confirmed cases since neighboring Equatorial Guinea reported a Marburg spread, the three states decided to strictly control movements across their common borders because the virus is extremely dangerous and highly contagious. He says it is the duty of all states to protect citizens from diseases and hardship. The Cameroon government says merchants should present themselves to border surveillance teams of health workers and police to facilitate the movement of goods. On February 15, Cameroonian authorities said 2 cases of Marburg disease were detected on its southern border with Equatorial Guinea. Cameroon says it has been struggling to contain a cholera and yellow fever outbreak and COVID-19 and will do everything possible to protect its territory from Marburg. The highly infectious disease is similar to Ebola, with symptoms including fever, muscle pains, diarrhea, vomiting, and in some cases, death through extreme blood loss, according to the World Health Organization. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Pistorius will remain behind bars, a South African parole board decided Friday after the double amputee athlete applied for early release. For VOA, Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
The board said it denied the parole request because Pistorius, once dubbed the Blade Runner for his high-tech prosthetics, was not yet eligible and hadn't reached the minimum detention period required. Pistorius, 36, was sentenced to 13 years in prison for the murder of his model girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, on Valentine's Day 2013. He said he believed there was an intruder in the house, saying that is why he shot 3 times through the bathroom door, killing Steenkamp. The Paralympic gold medalist, who also ran in the 2012 London Olympics, has always maintained his story, despite the verdict finding him guilty of murder. Ahead of the parole hearing in Pretoria, the victim's mother, June Steenkamp, told media she didn't believe Pistorius was remorseful or rehabilitated. The Steenkamp's lawyer, Tanya Cohen, spoke to VOA about the family's reaction to the parole board's decision.
While they welcome today's decision, it's not a celebration for them because they still miss Reva every day, but they are pleased that justice has prevailed.
The board said Pistorius could apply for parole again in August of next year. Pistorius's lawyer, Julian Knight, told local media he would be taking this decision on review. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg. VOA.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Talks in Sudan aimed at reaching a final agreement to name a civilian government next month and launch a new transition to elections have hit a roadblock. Military and political sources tell Reuters that disagreements have emerged over a timeline for the integration of the powerful paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, into the military. Reuters says army, police, and intelligence withdrew from the talks, which concluded Wednesday without issuing any recommendations. Reuters say the military prefers a 2-year timeline for integration. International facilitators have suggested 5 years, while the RSF prefers 10 years. Both forces say they are waiting for the results of a technical committee discussing details on integration. A civilian government is due to be named on April 11. Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA. Right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Yeah. giving the one my love. Diamond walk a mori. Chinelli ne wash the kori. Ongi vegali sinji si yon. Kimbo lak el kori. Your ex-man like an enemy funny. You know cause you do me. Mong am jelly go to my sing kube. I'm different thing funny kube. Yazo song song. Marang nandaba. I can put you on. Wanna go nyala. Jengele ne mod. Speaking of a share, see him at a mile and a baby for me. But still in the morning, my kid, why next week? Better tell him it's more than love, this time I see. Don't lie, belly soup, baby, when I wake, don't want ever look me. I shall it back, the top of them ten. Cause you know, want you, when you talk to me, baby. Eba si fuga ni shutando rukwele Nkwelu bapeke izi tele Ouzi kwelu ngavumi zingi I think it's sad Utando lako ngeenshe Hamina ngawe ngikwele Sange bang fagu moya ngawe ngayfela Bangi tinya puma nyufuna masen Uze wena nomde ni wamin medese Tala nifuna ngayten Majusungu wami kizifu tumeli Fela maputa malina stand Chalo mangi na wengi zizu angelili Nitu tanda mili Fela gunga shiti yang sanganisa Fana na wange kapina beku naglilisa Muko doktis Mati ngili Ungenza ngilisa Nitu tanda mina Fela gunga shiti yang sanganisa Singa nguba nepis na isanganisa Muko doktis Mati ngili Ungenza ngili Nitu Eba si fuga ni shutando rukwele Nkwelu bapeke izi tele Ouzi kwelu ngavumi zingi I think it's sad Utando lako nungenja nshirina Angikabanga wena njalo Sega bando falo Oh baby lale la iskalo Ausate mihaino Autado
Music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mike Hovey, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a tree is bent when it is still wet. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.